The post office has some grim news to deliver.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The post office continues to have trouble balancing its budget. This morning, a Senate committee hearing looks at the Postal Service's ongoing financial losses and what can be done about those losses. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is with us live to talk about it this morning. Good morning, Mitchell.
Hi, Steve.
What's the Postal Service's balance sheet look like?
Well, for the last 3 years, the Postal Service has lost money. It'll be roughly $7 billion in the red this year. Mail volume keeps falling. You can thank email, I guess, e-everything for that.
Yeah.
The Postal Service is kind of an odd government animal. It's supposed to pay its own way. Revenue from stamps, bulk mail and the like is supposed to cover the cost of operation. And there's a statutory limit, actually, on how much the post office can borrow from taxpayers. Congress might have to raise that this year.
So what are the options then, Mitchell?
Well, union contracts make it pretty hard to downsize and save very much on labor. Some small fixes include shifting pension payments to cover current expenses and eliminating Saturday delivery. But Don Seufer of the Free Market Lexington Institute says cost cutting could be pretty tough.
Part of the problem here is Congress vehemently resists any effort to close post offices or mail sorting facilities. The Postal Service has more retail outlets than Walmart and McDonald's combined.
And one thing that never changes, I guess, is dog bites for the Postal Service. New data is just out. Houston has the most postal worker dog bites, followed by Columbus, Ohio, and San Diego. Steve, there is an economic angle here. It costs the post office $1.2 million in pain, suffering, and medical expenses every year.
Dog bites problem. Okay, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joining us this morning. Mitchell, thanks.
You're welcome.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are off right now. The Dow down the most, more than a percent, at 146 points, 12,402. Builders broke ground on fewer homes in April. Housing starts fell by more than 10%. And a prediction this morning from the Institute for Supply Management, the nation's manufacturing and service sectors will continue to grow. British oil giant BP had planned to team up with Russia's state-controlled oil firm Rosneft in a deal that would have allowed it to tap into the Arctic region. But the BBC's Rebecca Singer reports BP's plan for Arctic oil exploration has turned cold.
This was to be the deal that showed BP was back in business after the disastrous spill in the Gulf of Mexico last year. Its chief executive, Bob Dudley, believed a tie-up with Rosneft would prove BP was still a major player and could deliver growth. Nick McGregor is an oil analyst at Redmayne Bentley in London. He says BP has lost a lot of credibility.
It was potentially a good deal, but that they didn't stitch this up, first of all, and get a binding pre-agreement from their existing Russian partners really does call into question quite a lot about the way this deal and BP's being managed. And what people really want to see at the moment is absolute confidence in BP's management, not extra question marks.
McGregor says Dudley should have known better, especially since he'd previously headed up BP's Russian operations. BP had tried to reach a compromise with its billionaire partners, who argued any investment in Russian oil had to be done through them. But Rosneft is now free to strike a deal with other companies to look for oil in the Russian Arctic, and one of those is thought to be ExxonMobil. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by MassMutual, a mutual life insurance company owned by its members and policyholders. Learn more at massmutual.com/mutuality. By Manta, connecting millions of small business owners with new customers every day. On the web at manta.com. And by Indiana University's Kelly School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu.
European finance ministers are wrapping up more meetings in Brussels today. They've already approved a $111 billion bailout for Portugal. And now ministers are looking at whether Greece will need more financial help. The European debt crisis has exposed some deep flaws in the single euro currency. And dissatisfaction is rising in countries giving the bailout and to those taking them, too. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
At a garbage collection centre in Lisbon, workers are on strike protesting the terms of Portugal's bailout. They object to the deep cuts in public spending aimed at reducing the country's debts. Union organiser Luís Dias.
But who is paying these debts? It's the workers, the Portuguese workers, the Portuguese people. It's not the banks, it's not the government, it's we are.
Portugal enthusiastically adopted the euro, but union official Ana Oliveira says the bailout has underlined the downside of belonging to the eurozone.
We cannot manage our deficit as we want. We cannot choose the economic policy we want, but we have to accept what is imposed by the European Union.
There's even more dissatisfaction with the EU in Germany, but for different reasons. On the streets of Berlin, people complain about having to bail out other Europeans after they failed to be as prudent as the Germans.
We, the Germans, also had to face a lot of social cuts in order to avoid to get into trouble as Portugal, Ireland or Greece now is.
I mean, it's their problems, not ours. Why should we do something about it?
Many Germans feel betrayed, says Hans-Olaf Henkel, former head of the Association of German Industries. He says the public voted for a currency union, but they got what Germans call a transfer union instead.
Which means that the German taxpayer in the future will also have to support Greece, Portugal, Spain, probably Italy, and eventually France.
Supporters of the euro say such fears are certainly exaggerated, but the single currency, which was aimed at bringing European countries closer together, appears to be having the opposite effect. At the European desk, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, Don Gorski will eat Big Mac number 25,000 today. The Wisconsin man has been eating two of the McDonald's special sauce favorites every day for nearly four decades. Gorski already has a Guinness World Record. He says he's in fine health, although his wife says he doesn't get enough vitamins. You can see a snippet of Gorski in the documentary Supersize Me. We've got that link at our website, marketplace.org. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
You think China's economic rise is something new? Yeah, not really.
Well, China is a huge country, which throughout of its history has considered itself the central kingdom of the universe that they knew. So they have a tradition of being the dominant country.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Henry Kissinger reflects on China. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.